Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. This is Wednesday. This is the 3rd of April, and we have another Dynamite show for you. We're going to be getting an update from Sophia Stewart. You know that she did win her case, and now she's waiting for her money to come in. And my co-host is Eric Payne.
Hey, how you doing?
Eric.
Everybody out there in internet land. On the internet, says the great George W. Bush used to say.
On the internet, is that it?
On the internet.
Last week's show, he said on the internet?
On the internet.
No kidding.
God bless him.
No, I'll tell you. You know, Gwen Goldsby Grant, my friend of mine, is also listening in, and she's down in Florida right now. So we gotta say hello.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah. Gwen has some Dynamite books out. She used to work for Essence magazine, and she was doing relationships and absolutely fantastic, all over the radio and television. That's absolutely great. But anyway, listen, everyone, we are going to be talking about a number of hot topics today, and one of the hot topics is gun control. You know, we're going to be talking about also, I want to be talking about...
The lack of gun control.
Also, I want to be talking about black businesses, you know. Because a lot of them are still suffering, and there's so many different black businesses out there that we need to pay attention to. I talked to Janice Holder, you know, tonight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's going to be coming out, calling in and coming on, you know, later on in this month, April.
Right.
And Gwen Goldsby Grant, she's going to be coming on, you know, mm-hmm. about her books and her motivational speaking. You know how fabulous Gwen is. You know, we go back many, many years. I also want to talk about child abuse. It's still, you know, this bullying thing still has me, you know, a little bit upset, especially in the elementary school.
Right.
Also, I had a friend of mine who called and said that, especially with young black and Latino males, you know, they have that bullying going on. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Sophia's on the line right now. Let's go right away to Sophia, and then Tracy Marquet is going to be calling in also. She's an extraordinary attorney, entertainment attorney, and, you know, she wants to meet Sophia and talk to you. Sophia, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you doing, Kay?
Fine, thank you. Eric is here.
Hi, Sophia. How are you?
Oh, fine. How are you doing, Eric? Glad to finally catch up with you.
Yes, it's good to talk to you again, too, as well. You know, it's ironic, because I just happened to talk to a friend of mine that lives out there in Vegas. You're living out there in Vegas as well, that's correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right, so it's kind of ironic.
Right. So, well, because I know they're telling you that we're swimming now.
You guys
we're enjoying summer weather here.
Don't rub it in, Sophia. Nobody likes a braggart.
You know, I was trying to get to you, trying to tempt you to come out here and get a swim.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to Vegas in quite a while, and it's hot out there for sure. It's hot. I see why
it
you
really is.
Have a nightlife.
How are you doing?
What's going on with you and the battles that you're waging, the mother of the Matrix? And do you have any updates that you can give us about what's going on?
Ah, man. Yes, I do have some updates that I think you guys are going to be just blow you away. What I found out yesterday, me and Skip. Skip is a VP of All Eyes on Me. And Skip Belcher.
Now, All Eyes on Me is one of your companies?
Yeah, All Eyes on Me, Inc., is located here in Vegas.
Okay.
And Skip is the vice president of business affairs. And, he's on the phone with me right now.
Uh-huh.
And you got to hear him here in a minute.
Uh-huh.
But I want to give you the update on what we discovered yesterday.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
We told you guys about that article that just came out in TMZ several weeks ago about this writer, white writer, male, claiming that, you know, he wrote Matrix 2 and 3.
Yeah, Alphonse.
And, yeah, this was going on when we were right in the middle of negotiations with a $1 billion production company, and they're going through title changes. You know, they're clearing the titles and checking out the titles so they can get Matrix 4. They're super billionaires, so they don't really care about Warner Brothers. They just want to make sure everything is legitimate. so they can do Matrix 4.
Uh-huh.
Then out of nowhere comes this guy, you know, just when we're doing these transactions, you know, these negotiations, then out comes this guy claiming he filed a lawsuit. Well, we were preparing him for interviews yesterday and giving him the hard, you know, the hard questions. And while he was talking to us, I don't even think he was even aware of what he was saying. But anyway, he brought up some really phenomenal information pertaining to RICO, you know, racketeering, you know, influence corrupt organizations, you know, in other words, counterfeiting, money laundering, wire fraud, mail fraud, and all this stuff. Well, it appears from the way this guy was speaking, Thomas Outhouse, that he was there from the beginning when Warner Brothers and then stole the Matrix and the Wachowskis from me. And what he is claiming is that he went to the FBI and that the FBI, he pinpointed that this was the smoking gun, that Joe Silvers is the one that really stole the Matrix.
Mm.
Joe Silvers. Yeah, was really the thief. And then what happened was that he got into an argument with the Wachowski brothers over the movie Assassin.
Uh-huh.
That's the movie that had Antonio Banderas,
right,
and Sylvester Stallone in it.
Sylvester Stallone.
And yeah, and what happened was something that Joe Silvers did crashed that movie, and it pissed off the Wachowskis. They got a bad name for it, but it was something that Joe Silvers had done. This is what Thomas was saying. And anyway, he promised them to put their names on Matrix 1, that he would make it up to them by giving them Matrix 1 to put their name on it. And Thomas proves that he was actually there, because when they were doing the storyboard, if you remember the first Matrix, you guys, and I know Eric will remember this, he and Lisa, Neo has an ID, and on that ID or that data is talking about his birthday and his name and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy, Thomas Outhouse, says that that is his real personal information, that Neo's identity and stuff is really based on his birthday and his identity and his high school and his father's real name and all of his personal business.
Hmm.
In other words, this was CSI. He left his fingerprints at the crime scene.
Right. So,
and he said that's the smoking gun that would put Warner Brothers and Joe Silvers and them in jail, because according to Teresa Wright, who's over the database at Warner Brothers, it shows that Joe Silvers is the one that deposits the Matrix in over there at Warner Brothers in 94, that the Wachowskis never deposit anything. They never had any copyrights, and neither did Warner Brothers.
Wow.
And that the Wachowskis never even assigned anything to Warner Brothers because they had nothing. And nobody had any copyrights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now Thomas Outhouse is supposed to be filing filed for Matrix 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just brought up on the TMZ website, we just have it here, the art of what you're talking about. But go ahead and continue what you're saying.
Before you go on, I just want to find out if we're expecting another caller. I think we're waiting for Tracy Marquis. So she is
I'm here.
Yeah, Tracy, you're on?
I am. Hello to everybody. I'm trying to turn my radio.
Yeah.
Pardon me while I turn this down. Okay.
That, you know, we're going to
mute your phone. Yeah.
With Sophie, and then you just jump in when you can, Tracy. Okay, Tracy is one of the attorneys, Sophia, that I was telling you about. Eric?
Oh, well, that's great. I'm glad, because we definitely want her to listen to this.
That's right.
We definitely need to hear, because if anybody would understand it, even greater, but I know Eric got it. He got it real quick. When I say CSI, that's his favorite show. He got it immediately.
Well, I just pulled it up on TMZ, what you were saying. Thomas
Althaus
sued Warner Brothers and the Wachowskis. I lost the page from it. I'm trying to go back. But it says he sued for $300 million. I'm trying to
find. Yes, exactly. That's and correct.
It is on the TMZ website, like you said, for $300 million, claiming that someone other than the Wachowskis wants credit for that. He's a lawsuit against the siblings. In the suit, he claims that he came across the Matrix movies in 2010 and immediately recognized similarities to his own work, including plugins in the back of the characters' necks, robot-like agents dressed in suits and characters trapped at a train station. He's also suing the Wachowskis and Warner Brothers and producer Joel Silver for a copyright infringement, and he's demanding $300 million. Which they say, obviously, is a tiny fraction of the Matrix franchise, which is valued at about $2 billion. And this is off the TMZ website, as you stated, Sophia. So go ahead with what you were saying.
Yeah, because he's not claiming that he's the writer of the Matrix. He's claiming that they used teleplay. It's the same claim that Harlan Ellison had when he filed against them, James Cameron and Gail Ann Hurd, for the Terminator. He wasn't claiming he was the author of the work. He claimed that they only stole about $85,000 worth of teleplay. Mm-hmm. And people need to understand teleplay is just like stage dressing. Like if you were working with a designer and the designer designed the dress or the outfit, mm-hmm. and then you provided the dummy that the designer draped the dress on and the window showing, you know, like you got flowers in there, mm-hmm. and you fixed up the whole background.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But the teleplay was already copyrighted, so he had a copyright, Harlan Ellison, but he didn't do any microchip Naked Without Shame cyborgs because he was still working from H.G. Wells' old Iron Age premises. But let me go back to The Matrix. So anyway, Thomas Althaus did not understand RICO or the RICO laws, and I don't think he even understood what he was saying, because there's a lot of people who go out there and they commit egregious acts for 15 minutes of fame, and their ego demand that they get to be noticed, not because of the act or they're paying any attention to it. Somebody go out there and they shoot up a movie theater, they want people to notice them, give them some attention. They want 15 minutes of fame because their ego demands it. But they're not looking at the ramifications of how they're getting that 15 minutes of fame.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So, Thomas, go ahead.
We want Tracy to get in here also.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask Tracy if we can, Sophia. Tracy, if you are familiar with Sophia, I'm going to assume that you are, and your thoughts on that situation. This is Eric Payne.
Hello, Eric. How are you? I've heard a lot about you. Welcome back to the East Coast.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And actually, I'm still trying to catch up with some of the details of the question because we went into a few different, we digressed off the original question. And I think the original question dealt with the lawsuit by the other guy. Mm-hmm. Then we came back to the RICO action. And
right.
Curiously enough, Sophia, I mean, I am familiar with RICO, but more as it relates to drug conspiracies. So you're one of the few people who has used RICO for copyright. And, of course, your copyright infringement case is about 100 pages, so it makes for several nighttime, bedtime reading stories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, it's more than that, because my RICO is actually talking about the 1996 Anti-Counterfeiting Act. And when you counterfeit, it's criminal copyright infringement. It's not infringement. It's criminal copyright infringement because it's willful intent and it's theft. When people intentionally come and they counterfeit a copyright and they use money laundering and wire fraud and mail fraud,
when it's willful and wanton, it becomes a criminal action. And I know you contacted the U.S. Attorney's Office in, was it Salt Lake?
Yeah.
Because that is criminal copyright. You are exactly right.
Okay, ladies, We need to go for a little break right there, really quickly, before we get into the next phase of this conversation. So if you guys could hold on, we're going to go for a break really quick, okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy.
Yes, I'm going to text you.
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we are back. Kay Thompson here. Kay Thompson Live with Eric Payne.
Like I said, that was a quick break, wasn't it?
That was quick.
Hold over to the bathroom there. Get a bathroom break on that one.
Sophia Stewart and Tracy Marquis and Byron Saunders is sitting in also with us. We're going to be going into the second, you know, segment when we talk about, you know, the veterans and a couple of other things, gun control and all that sort of thing. So thank you, Byron. Thank you, Sophia. Thank you, Tracy. And, of course, Eric is the co-host.
So let's continue with that conversation. Pick up where you left off there. I think it was Tracy.
Yeah, well,
the only thing I want to add, Sophia, is that you must have had a hellified complaint to take to the U.S. Attorney's Office for them to turn it into a criminal copyright. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I can say that, because I'm one of the spooks who sat by the door, I'm a former assistant U.S. attorney. Uh-huh. And the only time any U.S. attorney or the duty assistant U.S. attorney takes a case of a magnitude like this is if they have ample evidence. So I'm curious to know what happened to that criminal copyright case.
I'm glad you asked that question because let me tell you, before I even filed a RICO case in 2004, I'm the one, because I studied law from the Brooklyn and Manhattan lawyers. I studied criminal law, contractual law, corporate law, I understand all laws except for realtor, you know, real estate law and, of course, family law. I know a little bit. But the other ones I'm well-versed in, you know, entertainment law and the others. And so, and I used to work for a law firm there in Beverly Hills, Benjamins and Sussmans, when I was at USC Film School. So I was already well-versed in law and stuff. So what happened was, when I first contacted, I'm going to make a long story short, Warner Brothers, they offered me a settlement immediately. They knew who I was and everything because my work was copyrighted and my copyright notice was on the work, so all you got to do is pull that up and you'll find out that I'm Sophia Stewart and I'm from the Bronx, New York. You, my background, everything is there. But at the time when I discovered the theft, I was living in Salt Lake because I come from a military family and my brother was stationed there and I was there visiting him. When I discovered this, the theft, March 31st, 1999. And then the first thing I do is I contact one of us legal department because I'm well-versed in law. I got like 20 credits in a major. I was studying to be a lawyer or a doctor. Got 20 credits in each major, yeah, and so psychology and, of course, law. So first thing they do is put me in with an in-house attorney, Judy Nulak. And Judy Nulak told me for a settlement, $5 to $7 million. And she tells me, no, don't settle with them. She's an honest lawyer. She said she and other people on the set saw the Wachowski brothers using my work, you know, when they were doing the storyboarding and putting in dialogue and so forth like they do a comic book. In fact, they created a comic book also. So anyway, I immediately aborted everything, the settlement offer. And I called up the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I got Elizabeth Ann Stevens, the prosecutor, on there. And I said, hi, my name is Sophia Stewart. I wrote The Matrix. I didn't know anything about The Terminator. And I said, would you like to prosecute the case? And she said, yeah, sure. She said, you know what you got to do? Take the evidence over to the FBI. They'll investigate it, bring it back, and we'll prosecute the case. I did just that. I went over there. The first thing they asked for was my copyrights. They put a copy of them. And they start interviewing. And right away, they start pulling evidence right out of the files. It was John Barrios and Jeffrey Ross, these two agents. And when they called over to the U.S. Attorney's Office to speak to Elizabeth Ann Stevens about prosecuting, they got the big man, Greg Diamond, on the phone. And Greg said, well, all the prosecutors are here. Let's take a vote. He called back in 10 minutes. He said, yeah, everybody wants to prosecute the Matrix case. Take her paperwork. Start the investigations. Well, anyway, as they were going through my paperwork, they start pulling evidence out of there. Well, Jeffrey Ross, he had already seen the Matrix 1. And, of course, John Barrios is pulling in. He said, oh, my God, look at this. Here's a barking dog, he tells Jeffrey Ross. And Ross was like, really? And I said, what's a barking dog, I asked. And he said, this is Joel Silver's letter asking for a lawyer when he hasn't even been accused of anything yet. Yeah, Joel Silver's already showed up right then and there with this letter, asking for a lawyer. Nobody had accused him. No one had pointed a finger at him. No one had done anything towards in his direction. They didn't know anything about him. And then they go ahead and they investigate the case, and they find out in 2000 and 2001, they tell me that not only did you write The Matrix, you wrote The Terminator 2. All the characters have been identified as your work. Every introduction of every movie has your protective expression, which is the copyrights in them. And they go and they tell Warner Bros. To shut it down.
Wow.
But Warner Bros. Is too much money, billions of dollars, too much money. Matrix 1 made $1 billion, won 4 Oscars, too much money. Couldn't shut it down. So, but they got scared. They got scared. Anyway, the U.S. Attorney's Office was supposed to prosecute them when they came back with all the evidence. The different agents discussed with me, like Robin Earhart and Yvonne Alamo and Jeffrey Ross and John Barrios. So all of these agents are discussing with me and telling me what's the evidence, giving me the evidence, and they say to fear. For the civil case, when you go to court, all you have to do is have your attorney to subpoena this evidence. That's all you got to do.
That's right.
And so when I go to court, the reason why I go to court is this is going to blow your mind because I'm waiting on the criminal. See, the criminal case got to come before you do the civil case because that's normally
that's true. And, but how it works is that the civil case is abated until the end of the criminal case. I mean, that's all that's happening. But you still have to file a civil case so that it's on the book, so to speak. And then from there, because I was a civil AUSA and a criminal AUSA, all the civil case has to do, and of course you don't need a civil AUSA for the civil case, but all you have to do is literally subpoena the evidence from the criminal case, but after the criminal case is over. It's the easiest thing to do if you're a civil attorney.
Exactly, but let me tell you this: when it came time for the U.S. Attorney's Office to prosecute the case, they get bought out. Greg Diamond and Elizabeth Ann Stevens gets bought out, and Greg Diamond calls me up to get me to lie about the investigations.
Did you keep
me
a journal?
I didn't keep a journal. I got a photographic memory, so I know I can pinpoint exactly everything, details and names, everything. I am not joking with you. And I told him, no, I'm not going to lie. And he and Elizabeth Ann Stevens, they were calling me back and forth, and guess what? They were calling me actually from the U.S. Attorney's Office, so it's all on record. And it's probably on tape. And...
So-
Yes,
so,
go ahead.
In the interest of time, if we can kind of in brief, where does your case stand now?
Clear this. I'm going to make it really short. Because she needs to hear this. I filed a RICO because they didn't do their job. That's why I filed a RICO. And the judge on the case, because I'm the last case that the late Johnny Cochran called for. I'm his last case.
Hmm.
Terry Williams, his publicist, hooked this up, and she invited me to his funeral. So I'm the last case, I made history as being his last case because he got sick and he died.
Yeah.
And he told me he knew Hatter. He told me he knew Judge Hatter. That Judge Hatter was a good judge. He'd been over backwards to make sure that I got justice. And what happened was... I asked Judge Hatter and told him the story, what I told you, and I said, can I bring RICO charges against these people? And Judge Hatter says, if you can answer these 20 questions, then I will allow for the RICO to be served upon them, and which he did. And that's how I got the RICO. And Warner Brothers and couldn't beat the RICO because they had committed criminal fraud and criminal copyright theft. So they called me up, Bruce Isaac, their attorney, for the Wachowskis and Warner Brothers and Fox, and asked if I would drop the RICO because he couldn't beat the RICO. I was going to send him to jail. I said no. And what happened was that a lot of people don't know is that Andy and Larry Wachowski and Warner Brothers never answered the amended complaint. The case was never adjudicated against them. That's why I filed a second lawsuit against them, because it was never adjudicated. They never answered.
Mm-hmm.
And they covered it up. And the judge couldn't dismiss the case. She mm-hmm. couldn't dismiss the case on a summary judgment because the FBI was holding the evidence. It wasn't my fault, because they had hired these four attorneys, Warner Brothers, to sabotage the case. And one of the attorneys told on them. One of the attorneys, Dean Webb, was a witness. And he said, Sophia, Warner Brothers sent us to sabotage your case. That's why none of the attorneys will file the judicial notice that the Wachowskis and Warner Brothers never answered the amended complaint. They lost the case immediately. All this was covered up because they put their own judge, Mara, on the case. They took out Judge Hatter by recusing, he had to recuse himself because his son is an attorney. They hired his son to take the judge out and put their own girl, Margaret Mara, on the case. And Margaret Mara knew them. They were all church members. Margaret had worked with Warner Brothers, so she should have recused herself. She knew Jonathan LaBelle, my former attorney, who didn't even have a license to practice law anywhere. He got disbarred in 93 for stealing money from a client.
Okay.
That's why he couldn't make any court appearances.
You know what? That sounds like a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, not only a documentary, but an incredible movie behind the dispute over the Matrix and
your
quest to get the credit for your work
mm-hmm.
and in creating those films and those scripts.
Okay.
Well, they had already admitted to a federal judge. The Terminator defendants admitted they stole the Terminator from me 18-odd years ago, and they wanted Judge Morrow to shut the case down on a statute of limitations. She said it was willful intent to admit to a federal judge that you stole something. The clock starts ticking the moment the victim discovers the theft or the crime, not when you commit the act. And then the Matrix defendants told the judge that I shouldn't be allowed to speak, nor Judy Dulac, because they had a settlement in place, a gag. And she mm-hmm. told them the gag was aborted, so therefore there was no gag protection. So she should have reported under 18 U.S.C. 2, 3, and 4, the judge under 4 should have reported the crime. They had admitted, which I have. I have the transcript where they admitted to the crime. She should have reported that. And I also have in the book the validations of the theft, because the FBI gave me the validations of the theft. And I put it in the book.
Okay.
So there's no dispute about any of this stuff that I'm talking about.
I want to we're going to have
undisputed.
We're going to have to go to a break really quickly in a minute or two. I just wanted to get Tracy's assessment about some of the things you were saying. Tracy, if you could jump in there from you hearing this, because none of us in the studio are attorneys like yourselves.
Let's go for a break first.
We need to go for a break right now really quickly, and I'd just like to hear that, and then we could wrap up this discussion because we have some other guests that we want to go into. We want to get Brother Nash in on some things as well.
Brother Byron Saunders.
Saunders, I'm sorry. Nash. But we're going to go for a break really quickly.
Stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back.
New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, a.k.a. Tri-State area, you're in the perfect spot to join a fast-growing community of energetic, political, creative, and eco-conscious activists focused on real climate change and environmental awareness. Now it's time to bring the fight to the airwaves. So we're calling all musicians, students, professionals, and earth lovers to get down with Eco-Socialist Horizons on the GoPro Radio Network and help tackle the greatest challenge humanity has ever faced. If you're interested in getting involved, and there are many ways that you can, both on and off the air, email us at ecohorizon@goproradio.com. That's Eco Socialist Horizons with Joel Cavell and Quincy Saul, only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. www.goproradio.com.
I got it, Shauna. Love that beat. We are back, and we have just about maybe 4 or 5 minutes before we have to tie this up, Sophia and Tracy. Tracy,
oh, okay.
Wanted to ask Sophia before we go. Tracy, are you there?
But no, I have a comment, and thank you, Eric, for inviting me to make a comment. And the only legal terminology I can use for this for this, Sophia, is you got screwed. I mean, that's my legal terminology for today. You definitely got screwed. Let me tell you something. Hold on. I want to be real brief. You're right on the criminal copyright, doing it on RICO. I commend you. Mm-hmm. With the legal training that you had, you assessed the pattern of racketeering activity so succinctly. I got to hand that back to you on a silver platter because you've got the criminal copyright, you got the pattern of racketeering activity, and you have the continuity. What you don't have is a conviction or a judgment, and that's where you got screwed. One last thing.
Oh, wait. I didn't get screwed. No,
Good.
They got
you
screwed.
You didn't. Did you get a conviction? Did you get a judgment?
No. Listen to me, sweetie. Bernie Madoff got screwed 20, 30 years down the road. All of them get screwed 20, 30 years down the road. And it's time for them to get screwed. So, no, I didn't get screwed. It's time for them to get screwed. And guess what? That piece of evidence that I mentioned to you earlier, the fingerprints, that's how all of them going to go to jail. Because all it takes is one witness. And this fool right here, Thomas Outhouse, gave me exactly the thing I need to cut their heads off.
Wow.
For all of them to go to jail. Oh, right. Believe me. It's even more deeper than you can even imagine because I just only gave you a little piece of it, just a tip of the
iceberg. I got
you.
Well, I want to get back at you, sweetie, and I want to say this. All I'm saying is you need to get a better attorney. I see where you sued him for $150 million. That clearly wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Wow, okay.
No, the damages can exceed $1.8 billion.
So they're going to have to...
You have you tally up the damages,
and I'm addressing both of them. One I was addressing, the criminal copyright, and then the other one, the attorney. I hear you, Kay. I'm going to be quiet. You got to go to your next guest.
We're going to have to go, and Sophia, thanks for that. They're going to have to back up the truck full of money to your house for what they owe you. Thanks for giving us an update. We're going to be in keeping up with this story until you get your just due.
Tracy, thank you so much, and thank you, Sophia. Sure. We'll get back to you either next week or the week after that to make sure that people are up to date with where you are and where we are with this. Okay?
Got it.
All right. Thank you.
Tracy, thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right.
Amazing story, my
friend. Yeah, is that something? What are your observations here?
I think it's an intense subject matter.
And
as you can hear, sometimes in making our points, we get not emotional, but we get passionate.
Yeah. The passion is good, though.
And passion is good.
Yeah.
And two ladies who certainly know what they're talking about.
Exactly.
And as we know, Tracy's involved in the entertainment industry as well. Mm-hmm. We want to talk to her about other things that she's working on.
You know what I found really, really interesting in the conversation?
And this is Byron Saunders talking right now.
What I found really interesting in the conversation between the attorney and the Sophia is that the intent and the willful intent to distort justice and the system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they literally placed intentionally the false information.
Saboteurs.
They bought in their own judge. Mm-hmm. They tried to buy in the attorneys. And ultimately, like you said, this is a script unto itself.
That's
better than Wall Street. Come on.
But guess what? They did not count on dealing with a black woman.
They didn't. They really didn't.
And
it was
brilliant.
Amazing.
One
of
that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I got the message. I'm on the microphone.
Move closer.
Okay. So anyway, any event though, so that I can get into the,
yeah, you need
the,
to get
the film,
shot,
the camera. Right.
Cameras here.
Just tell me to get into the hot spot. That's all I need.
I'm waiting for me to get into the hot spot. The heck with you two.
But you know what? It really does prove that in this industry, you really have to know how to protect your sweat equity. Okay?
That's true.
And you know, we're thinking too, Byron, now we're very protective of Sophia, because when I first heard the story, it was through Glenda Taylor, you know, writer, poetess, you know, whose books are, you know, known,
right.
And she's a fabulous writer. As a matter of fact, just to digress for a minute, she wrote a book, I forget the name of it right now, but it's profiles on African-American women.
Glenda
entertainer.
Okay.
Glenda did.
Okay.
And what she did was she calls, oh, this is her, one of her latest books called Jalamuso's Drum. We have it at home, Eric. And that talks about these African-American entertainers, females, who are considered griots,
right.
You know, or Jalamusos, because of the fact that she considers that they are griots, because when they traveled through foreign countries, they would all, you know, notice what was going on, the culture and everything, and they would come back and talk about it and also sing about it.
And so you heard, as you tie this together, you heard about Sophia through Glenda.
Through Glenda.
Because Glenda had been doing this book about that information. That's interesting.
That's
anyway, we know that personally Glenda is a very, very smart woman and personal
brilliant
friend of yours.
I was on that show, and we talked about Eartha Kitt.
Yes,
we talked about
remember that?
The wonderful stories that she's had
and
in her
Sissy
book.
Houston, yeah.
And Sissy
you
Houston.
Know,
oh, my goodness,
wow,
yes.
Whoopi Goldberg, she really analyzes them. But Glenda told me about Sophie, and she was the one who put us two together, and I find the two of them amazing women.
Yeah. I had heard about it separately that, you know, you hear from people in the business that The Matrix was written by a black woman, and it was on an internet story and things like that. So a lot of people in L.A., people in the industry, African-Americans, know about it. And if, like I said, if you look at some of the aspects of those movies, I was like, wow, these white guys, I didn't call them. I just felt that these filmmakers were very liberal in terms of when you see The Matrix 3, the Zion, the place they're trying to go is populated by brown people.
A lot of
brown people. So I was like, wow, it's real progressive what these guys are seeing. And, you know, it was shot in, I think, in New Zealand, too, so a lot of extras down there. But it kind of makes sense when you see these certain aspects of the movie that there might have been an influence other than from a European perspective. And also the one image of in Matrix 1, where Francis Foster, obviously the God character, is an African American woman who does. When you look at Sophia's picture here that I have Googled her, and
looks
similar
like her,
to Francis Foster, as Sophia said, and also the image of when Neo first gets hurt, and Fishburne and Marcus Chung, or I forget the other two actors, are working on Neo, just the physical picture of these three African Americans working on this white dude, almost kind of putting him back together. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to read A Message to the Black Man by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and in it, one of his theories is that, you know, Yaakov created the Caucasian race.
Yeah.
So that kind of it reminded me of that notion. So, I mean, you know, I didn't read the whole book because of some of the other stuff that was coming forth, but it was interesting.
You'll be interested to know that there was a piece in on the internet today talking about how they discovered the entrance to hell.
Yeah, I saw the gates of hell. Discovered that somewhere.
Makes you really think about that. It's fascinating.
Yeah. The History Channel is doing some very interesting things, you know, especially with the Bible. And,
no,
you know,
I'm mad at the History Channel with their Bible documentary that The actor that plays Satan just happens to slightly resemble the President of the United States.
Yeah. You mean slightly?
Oh, yeah.
Slightly.
Okay.
Yeah. Now,
and he was Muslim, too.
And he was a Muslim. Yeah. And they said that he, you know, the information they put is that this guy was an actor.
Right.
And you know, he's been working a lot. Yeah. But it's just like, oh, really? You really? And, they, and, you know, you talk to, you see Roma Downey and Burnett guy, the reality king. And, you know, they're Christians. We support the president. I thought it was on The View. There was somewhere that they said that, and we love them. But it's just like, okay, I don't know. Intentional or not, I don't know. But I know that in that business, and images are very powerful things.
Yes.
That it seemed to be a little bit too coincidental for me. So I boycotted that particular show. Also, you know, there's the notion that Jesus was a black man.
Mm-hmm.
So a skin like unfinished brass, is that what it says?
Bronze.
So I've never seen unfinished bronze, but I have an idea that it's probably not going to be really light like white. So mm-hmm.
Well, there are two paintings to refer to. One is a first century painting. It's actually in the Sistine Chapel, mm-hmm. which shows Jesus and several of his disciples, and it's kind of hidden in the Sistine Chapel, mm-hmm. but it is definitely brown skinned.
And just to mention Jesus. Another thing, the Madonna
of the
African-American the statue of the Black Madonna,
is
in Portugal. And I remember, you know, talking to Dr. Ben. Remember, I have the shows with Dr. Ben, Dr. Van Sertema, Dr. Clark, and Dr. Len Gunther, all on one show in a part one and part two.
Wow.
And each of them took a different aspect of the evolution of man.
Mm-hmm.
And as Randall Robinson said on Sunday on C-SPAN, he said, the history, you know, of the black man comes from Africa, from Egypt, and he said that the men were very, very dark men.
Oh, yeah. Right. There's a Coptic, there's a picture of Jesus
and
his
disciples.
And by
the way, that's why he has quit America. Randall Robinson from Trans-Africa.
Right.
There's a wonderful picture that's on the Roots page today of Jesus and his disciples from the Coptic Christians of Ethiopia.
Uh-huh.
Very black.
Mm-hmm. What paper are you talking about?
It's in the Roots website that you might want to check.
Yeah, I'm writing that down right now.
Right, and it makes no mistake about it. You're looking at the caption says, the earliest known painting of Jesus Christ and his disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, the whole thing about, you know, what the color of God is, Jesus the Lord, is something that people don't want to, you know, when you start talking about that, then some other people are going to say, well, what difference does it make? You know, and it really doesn't make a difference until you try to perpetuate a certain image of God and you ask a certain segment of the population to accept this image all your life. And then all I ask is that, would you accept the same possibility that God might not look like you, that he might look closer to me?
Yeah, exactly.
And so we all know that God looks, that we're all created in his image. But, you know, like, come on, if you want us to accept that in fact is the case, then accept that, you know. And you know, if you go to different cultures around the world, they have different images of what they think God is. And so, you know, just, you know, don't ask everybody to believe that God is necessarily going to have European features. So.
And then tell me that the origins of man come from the Nile. Okay,
I mean,
how can you differentiate
exactly
that concept and then tell me that, what I understand, though, but when the church is split, mm-hmm. and the Eastern Orthodox and the Church of Rome
mm-hmm.
made that initial split, that's when the issue of color began to change.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And because right, the Orthodox Christians at that time still related to even Paul mm-hmm. the Apostle, mm-hmm. Rather Paul's writings, which implied a relationship with Egypt, Africa, and Ethiopia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And his travels, he even says so in his travels to Corinth, to Rome, to the Romans. His letters each identifying why he made those trips, because these were areas where the Christian religion had to be validated, mm-hmm. because they kept falling further and further away from the origin.
Mm.
That's important to understand.
Really, it's too much. It seems like you can always count on Byron.
You know a lot of stuff, brother.
Brother, you should.
You're deep. Exactly. You're a deep brother.
We're so glad that you are here.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Yeah.
I feel as if I'm amongst the elders, okay?
Well, I got to be elders?
Yeah,
the hell with you, man.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Don't let the white hair fool you.
All right. No, you're still a young man. I know.
No, we're...
But this is extremely interesting because of the fact that all this history, you know, only backs up what Sophia is talking
That's
about.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, and... For instance, like, you know, when I was talking about Randall Robinson, who mm-hmm. I really didn't know that he was still around,
mm-hmm.
but he has, you know, settled, he and his wife, in St. Kitts,
mm-hmm.
and he said he is obsessively black, and he blames white America, you know, for stealing, you know, black Africans' identity.
Mm.
black man's identity is a matter of fact. He was mentioning, or who was mentioning, Washington, D.C. You know, Eric, when you go into congressional buildings and whatnot, and you see the workers working on the different, you know, building of, do you ever see any, you know, anything that looks like Africans building any, you know, credit at all to black or to Africans building Washington, and they were the ones who did it.
I grew up in Washington, D.C., and
so
I can tell you, the construct of Washington, as everybody knows, it's Rome. It is our present-day Rome. As I growing up in the 50s and the 60s in Washington, D.C., the population was 85% black. It was very well known.
And thank goodness for Obama, because through him, we have a statue of Martin Luther King. And we also have a statue of Rosa Parks. Now, there should be more to come. For instance, like with Donald Payne, your uncle, Eric, there's now a statue of him.
Joe DiVincenzo. But your point, I want to get back to Byron's point about Washington, D.C. You were saying in the 50s and 60s.
Yes.
It was, and so you're saying that there wasn't any really credit towards the slaves that really built.
And
everybody knows the one job in Washington, D.C., which was known as the slave job, working for the postal system.
But that's why so many black people to this day work in the postal system.
That's exactly why. And when you begin to understand why the Republicans want to deconstruct the federal government and cut the jobs, it's because most of us have the federal job.
And
therefore, it then becomes a, they understand that if they can cut it from that level, then they can reduce the importance and the influence of the federal government in the communities. They're still trying to fight the Civil War.
Of course.
You know?
They're evil geniuses. and also, I mean, you know, I want to move into, and this, and you kind of starting to veer into politics, so I want to move into another subject matter, which is, you know, the gun debate, which here's something I find ironic, that, you know, there's a certain look or physicality that mass murderers have, if you know what I'm saying. And it's, I find it ironic that the people on the other end of the spectrum that are trying to fight against gun control look similar to those guys. If you hold a picture up about these guys who were mass murderers. It's time for a break. We're going to go to in a minute. Just let me wrap up this in a couple of seconds. But, you know, you hold a picture of say, these guys that are promoting anti-gun control.
Yes.
NRA guy and the other guy that came out the other day. And you hold a picture up of the guys who were the shooters. There's certain similarities in those individuals.
Yes, wide open eyes.
Other than they have two eyes and a nose. And you might know what I'm talking about.
Right.
There's certain, maybe they're from the same
elephant in the room
region of the back of the world.
Yeah.
So I just found it funny. But I guess we got to go to a break here for a minute or two.
We will be right back. Shauna, are we going to be going for a break right now? Yes, we are. Okay.
Break it down.
Yeah.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
Get, you know, and we are back. We are back. Kay Thompson live here.
So I'm understanding
my co-host.
Yeah,
Eric Payne, and also with
Byron Saunders.
Byron Saunders. Okay.
Not Nash.
Byron.
I don't know who is Byron.
I don't know that guy.
I don't know who that. I don't either. I don't know why that came in, but these guys with the gun control thing.
Yeah.
I don't really get it, because I was watching earlier this morning. I just happened to hear MSNBC, this woman, Alex Wagner, on her show. And she quoted a figure since the Newtown shooting. Connecticut.
Connecticut.
That she quoted a figure. She was talking about even over the Easter holiday weekend, there was several shootings and gun accidents. And she, I'm not even sure about this figure. I don't want to quote 30,000. But, I mean, which is possible in a country with a population of 300 million people. But there was I think she might have said there was maybe it's 3,000, I hope it's 3,000, not 30,000 shootings since the Newtown tragedy, and or gun accidents, gun violence things. And I just don't understand why their resistance to universal background checks. I really don't understand it until you look at somebody's getting paid somewhere.
Mm-hmm. The sequestering. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at that as it relates to the gun industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It relates directly because the sequester is to cut the defense budget by up to 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you cut the defense budget, what are you really cutting? You're not just cutting military personnel. You're cutting armament.
Right.
You're cutting the gun manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
the war machinery itself.
Right.
This is why those southern states, mostly red states with Republican governors and Graham and McCain and all of those who are fighting desperately to hold on to those government contracts, because that's the security of their entire MO.
What do they think? It's going to be another civil war, so therefore they're holding on to the government?
Well, not just another civil war, but the fact that the plum contracts that they give out to defense contracts are going to their friends and their pals who are in the munitions building industry.
And a lot of those plants and things are in those states, right?
In those areas.
What you understand, but, you know, it's, I don't know.
Here's something to consider today. Mm-hmm. Today,
uh-huh.
before coming in here, there was another tragic incident in West Virginia in which a sheriff got gunned down in front of the courthouse.
Really?
Now, mind you, mm-hmm. think about this. The Texas incident that shot
the district attorney.
Exactly. The shooting of a sheriff in front of a courthouse. They put the courthouse on lockdown.
And where was it where they shot the head of the
prison?
That was in Colorado.
Yeah.
Now, let's be honest. The elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about with respect to gun control is who are these communities protecting themselves against?
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to be the picture downrange, well, in the firing range, is a black individual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these communities that are arming themselves to the teeth, where they keep us out, suburbs, Tony communities.
Yeah.
All of the weapons are there. And so
that's what I was just referring to.
Then you have to realize exactly what are they building up all the armament for?
Exactly.
Right.
And their anticipation of a race war has been ongoing for the last 40, 50 years because of what they have extracted and done to people of color throughout this entire country for over 400 years.
Well, Malcolm X said, you know, chickens always come home to roost.
Yes, he did.
But here's the thing. You know, people don't want to sit next to people.
No.
You don't want to sit next to you in the classroom. No, that was never the issue.
Yeah.
We don't want to sit next to you in the classroom. The issue was, you know, when there was a Brown versus Board of Education, the issue was that if our students are in the class, next year's students, we know that they're going to have a quality education. Not because we wanted to sit next to y'all, because we know y'all usually come to our neighborhood and hang out. So, and you know, at the risk of sounding, I don't want to sound racial or racist, but I have to speak what I've observed as a black man in America for 53 years of my life. So it's not about being around, rubbing shoulders with anybody. It's about the equality. So every time we talk and we have the show, the time always seems to go really quickly. And I'm looking at the computer here, the time is 2 minutes to the end of the show, just when we start getting heated.
Yeah.
You know.
We could continue this on for another hour, you know, then open up the phones and get it
We're
all
gonna have to do a light show one day.
Okay.
You know, we'll just talk about light funny
Well, talking about
stuff.
Light shows, you know, we're gonna be putting in a new segment that's gonna be for women only.
That's not light.
And men are
I don't think that's not light. I won't be here.
Men are not invited.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to do this on WLIC.
That's okay.
I'm not offended.
And what used to happen was that
I might learn something.
In all probability, everybody.
You certainly won't be able to talk.
Can I be the fly on the wall?
Yes, Byron.
Okay,
but when I did that, you know, the men insisted on calling. You know, somebody even called, you know, Percy Sutton one time, saying she won't let us on. I said, this is not for you. And it was really, you know, surprising to hear the men calling, and they were really angry. And I had to say, look, you know, you owe us for womb and board.
Womb and board.
You know,
need to write that copyright. That's copywritten. Nobody try to use that out there.
For landing fee.
Womb and board. It's copywritten.
Okay.
Landing fee.
You also own us, you know, owe us for rent.
Oh my gosh!
You're on a roll,
body,
Ma. You're on a roll,
your,
Ma.
And your landing fee. I used to say this on WLIB.
Oh my goodness!
Then you owe us for room and board, landing fee. You know, at the
room
gate.
Room and board.
Let's,
at
you
the
know,
gate.
Yeah.
I don't want.
That's
copyrighted,
everybody.
You give me images. I don't even want.
I know.
My mother.
I'm traveling without bags these days. Okay.
So you know, you have people to really reckon with, yeah. And you know, really, women are getting a hard time. You know, need to be on welfare. The foster care thing is really, really awful. Kids are, you know, it's just, you know, we have to tie up right now.
Right.
Thank you for being
thank
here,
you.
Byron.
Yes.
Yeah,
thank you. I appreciate it, Eric.
You know, you're
going
to be taking over
thank
the
you,
show
sir.
Sometime soon. I hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, I'll be here, you know, to do other things.
See, the guy turned the music up. Hey,
yeah.
Hey.
Show him.
Turn the music up on me.
Kay Thompson, Kay Thompson Live. Thanks,
Eric.
Thanks,
Sophia.
Thanks, Byron.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thanks,
GoPro,
Tracy.
GoPro Radio Network. Where else you going to find
Lisa,
this type of
Gina,
this type of programming?
Christy. Alfredo. Rihanna.
I failed, doesn't mean that I'm a fool. Since the teachers think we're preachers, and there's a God in the classroom.